Hello, fellow Egypts. Welcome to Taranoia. With me, Tara Flynn, the most paranoid person in the world, the person who's battling most, I feel, my own fears and insecurities. But are you feeling that too? Well, then maybe we can do it together, because we're all Egypts. We're all just fools of fortune and our own attitudes to ourselves. But we're all doing our best. So there's hope. That's what we're aiming for on this podcast. It's a bank holiday. If you're listening on the first day this goes out, yesterday was St. Patrick's Day. So hope you're having a lovely bank holiday. Thank you for tuning in to Taranoia when you could be watching Darby O'Gill and the Little People, or one of those other things where everything is dyed green and everybody talks like, oh, to be sure, to be sure, to be sure. It's tricky. It's tricky when that's the engagement you've had about your country with the world for a long time, because some of that is funny and gas and all that. And some of it, I still have to keep telling Carl, who I'm married to, that, oh, fresh and clean as a whistle, isn't something that we say here about Irish spring soap, which wasn't marketed here at all. It's all a big lie. It's all a big lie by Big Lather. But welcome to Taranoia on your bank holiday. This episode of Taranoia, which is going to be about 13 rules for life. There's a lot of wisdom packed into this. So, you know, settle in, buckle up. This episode of Taranoia is brought to you, episode 30, by the way. I'm interjecting a lot against myself. I do it a lot. I'm trying to get better at not interjecting or interrupting with other people. My mind works very fast and I kind of go, oh, is it this? No, that's just rude, Tara. You're being rude. I'm trying to learn not to do that, but I even do it to myself. That's just, it's not good enough. I should give up interjections for Lent. I'm probably not going to succeed. There's my Taranoia at play, but I'll do my best. This episode of Taranoia, episode 30, can you believe it? 3-0. Amazing. Thank you for being with me through the thick and the thin. Mainly the thin, or mainly, I don't know, but you were mainly there. And thank you. I really appreciate it. This episode is brought to you by Emerald I'll Be Back, a new movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger as one of Ireland's oldest sprites. See as he battles with rainbows and beats up some sheep. Emerald I'll Be Back. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a robot from the future who knows all about tourism. There you go. Can't wait to see that one. And thank you so much to that incredible movie, which will surely be up for all next year's Oscars, sponsoring the show. As it was St. Patrick's Day yesterday, and we're talking about fabulous movies, I did actually have a chat and a couple with St. Patrick in my book, Ragin'. So this podcast is brought to you by the Headstuff Podcast Network. This book is brought to you by Headstuff and Mercier Press. Thank you to Mercier Press for putting a book out at all with me. You're so kind. Anyway, I'm going to read you an interview I did for the book called A Chat and a Cuppa with St. Patrick. You got to have faith, as George Michael says. And for centuries, what Ireland had was the Catholic religion, and not just when it came to church, our hospitals, education, even our laws are intertwined with it. But the country has gradually become more and more secular in recent years. So where does that leave us with all our Catholic teaching? To this day, most schools in Ireland have what they call a Catholic ethos. Where does it leave me? I thought it'd be enlightening to catch up with someone with his finger on the pulse, our patron saint, Saint Pat himself. As he's been reclusive of late, it takes me a while to track him down. And when I do, he asks me not to disclose his location. So I won't. But let's just say it was pretty meathsy to find. God, this is like cereal, isn't it? We put some exciting music behind it. This is like cereal. Anyway, so I won't disclose his location, but let's say it was pretty meathsy to find. The property is gated and the voice that answers and buzzes me in is surprisingly spry. He tells me to park behind the property. I do. It takes some time to walk around to the front of the house. I say house, though it's more of an earthen mound with a round tower sticking up out of it. Impressive in its own way, much like the man himself. He answers the door wearing pyjamas and slippers and that famous sweet smile. Sorry, he says. I'm just up. It's been quite the week and I'm not as young as I used to be. Takes me a while to get down the tower steps. I have to give him this. It's barely a week since the St. Patrick's Festival, focused on the 17th of March, his day and busiest time. As I step into the tower, I realise with some surprise that despite his being such a familiar figure, I've never heard his voice before. It's hard to place his accent. It's not Irish. Not, well, it's not Irish, but there's definitely a hint of the ancient about it. So I won't even bother trying to do that accent that I made up. I'm just going to read it in my own voice. He gathers up newspapers strewn here and there, all bearing front page pictures of Paddy's Day parades from around the world, and gestures for me to sit. I remark that I'm surprised to see that nothing, not the leather couch, not the stripy pyjamas, not even the potted plant, nothing is green. For a second, the twinkle leaves his eye. I've made some kind of faux pas, but it appears he's too polite to tell me what it is. He is, after all, a saint. Or is he? Once he has served me tea, he doesn't drink, he says, and won't keep alcohol in the house, he has settled into the large throne that forms the centrepiece of the room. Rather than tiptoe around the most controversial question, I decide to open with it. I say, isn't it true that you're no longer a saint, or that you never were one in the first place or something? Oh, straight in, he says. You don't mess about, do you? I say, I think it's something people are curious about. Oh, I don't pay much attention to titles. After all, some of the most atrocious people in history have been sainted, or are about to be. There are some clubs it's better not to be a member of. The celebrity has been fun so long as I have a place to get away from it all. I get a lot of heat 1 week of the year. For the rest of it, they more or less leave me alone. So you're not a saint, really, are you, St. Patrick? There you go again with your titles. Let's leave it at this. How many people do you know with thrones in their living rooms? I admit I don't know any, and I agree not to push it. So I push on. The whole snakes thing? Oh, God, the snakes. Look, that was a schoolboy prank that got legs, unlike snakes. Sure, there were never any snakes in Ireland. About 900 years ago, I was in charge of bringing a basket of eels to a friend's stag's do, a kind of weekend hunting actual stags. We were going to drop them down the groom's tunic, not the stags, the eels. En route, I fell asleep near a river and they slithered away. The lads were devastated that the prank was off and I got an unmerciful slagging, which stuck. But most crushing of all was my own disappointment in myself. Since then, no more mead for me. I get a lot more done during the day and I haven't lost an eel, not to mention a snake, since. Okay, St. Patrick, so what's your day like? Oh, I'm up very early. Not this week, of course. I get a lie-in shortly after the big day, but usually I am up early. In the week of my festival, I have a lot of public appearances to make, like St. Nicholas. I have to employ the odd look-alike. But I try to personally make as many as I can. The rest of the year is mainly spent in preparation, sit-ups, that kind of thing. Okay, so tell us something we wouldn't know about you. I invented the shamrock. I actually invented it. I wanted to teach the whole Holy Trinity thing, yada yada, and I picked up a four-leaf clover, secretly pulling off one of the leaves to make my point. Ireland's natural clover used to be the four-leaf clover, so to give the story credence, I have to go around and pull the one leaf off all of them. Ta-da! Shamrock. Something local to take in a bowl when visiting foreign dignitaries. Pulling those single leaves off is a year-round job. Detractors say that's why Ireland has had no luck of late, the lack of the four-leaf clovers, but that is just silly superstition. It's clear that my elderly host is visibly starting to flag, but before I finish my tea and take my leave, I have to ask, women, St. Patrick, do women figure in your story at all? He tenses his fingers and muses before answering. Oh, I have Twitter, you know. I read what people say, that if I hadn't come along, women in Ireland might be in a lot better position than they have been. I don't know if that's true. There were always those who saw them as chattel, but I can tell you what I think. Irish women have had to put up with an awful lot of dung, so fair play to you for sticking around at all. Also, St. Bridget is a very good friend of mine. St. Bridget is still alive. Oh, she's at every feminist rally in disguise, of course. She can't give the game away. But look down next time. She'll be the one wearing homemade rush sandals. He yawns. It really is time for me to go. As he shows me to the mound door, one last question. Why the no green? Oh, It's not my colour, he says. I'm more of an autumn. I know there must be more to this glorious mystery, but he slowly shuts the door, holding my gaze as he does so. There's something about Patrick, but all I know for certain is this. It's not what you think it is. That there was my CSI, my Celtic Saints investigation. I hope you enjoyed it. Now, as you know, I'm not a saint, but I reckon I could be a guru. Like, everyone's doing those self-help things, aren't they? They're rules for life or things like that, and they're doing big tours and making loads of money. So why can't I get in on some of that? Because I'm so wise, as you know, if you've listened to any of this podcast, I'm super wise. I may be paranoid, but I'm very wise. So I just wanted to give you some rules, some guidelines, and make a bit of a name for myself. You know, I want to live my best life. I can't let paranoia stop me from doing a tour where I tell you some basic common sense rules or old philosophy dressed up as new stuff. I can't deprive myself of that. It's time for me to rely on myself. I usually behave quite well. I like self-improvement. I'm down with that. So I have come up with, for you, 13 rules for life. And here we go. Here we go. We're going in. 13 rules for life. Number one, lie down a lot more. Now, a lot of people will tell you to stand up straight, that not only will that encourage you to think clearer and perhaps take more action, I say you need to lie down a bit. I think you've been overdoing it. It's about accepting responsibility, all this standing up. What if you're not responsible for some of the shit? So lie down. Have a dream. The best way to support yourself is by letting gravity do it for you. So rule number one is lie down a lot more than you already have been. Throw in some nappy naps. Have a few whiteouts. Go for a little dream for yourself. Because it's all very well to take action, and something we must do regularly, but the only way that we can really do that properly is by getting a lot of lying down time in. So lie down more. Best thing you can do for your shoulders. Rule two, treat yourself like a baby. An incompetent, floppy baby who needs cuddles and help. Why do we always have to pretend that we can cope? We can't. I know I can't cope all the time. Sometimes I just want someone to put me to bed and bring me a cup of tea. But if they brought me a bottle of milk, that'd be just as good. So I think we should treat ourselves more like little tiny babies who can't even drive. Because if you can't drive, you can't be asked to give anyone a lift. If you can't make decisions for yourself about when to go to the toilet, then why should you take responsibility for something that incels are doing on the internet? We can't fight them all. And maybe they'd feel less threatened by us if they just knew that we were all babies. So let's not treat anyone else like a baby, even if they behave like it. Treat ourselves like a baby. We deserve a lie down. We deserve to be burped. I want to be carried around the place in a wicker basket. Thank you. I'm a baby. Rule three, make friends with people with cars. Because seeing as you're now a baby who can't drive, you can't even use public transport, you're too short for seatbelts and things. Make friends with people with cars, because you can then put your baby seat in the back of their car and they can take you places. So while it's all very well to look for friends who big you up and support you even when you mess up, that's great and it's important. But the ones you really want to make friends with are the people with cars. Because when the apocalypse finally comes, you'll need something that floats. They'll have better tyres by then, I'm sure. And you'll be able to live with your friend in their car. It might happen before the apocalypse and the great flood, but you'll have somewhere to live. So make friends with someone with cars. Do it sooner rather than later. Time is running out. Number four, compare yourself to a hormonal teenager, not to a wise old hag. If you compare yourself to a wise old hag, you'll have none of the answers. I shouldn't do that as often as I do. Really, I'm a hormonal teenager who snaps a lot, who lets anger get the better of me, who's doing my best but messes up and just wants to slam the door and go into my room. So if I compare myself to that hormonal teenager, I don't slam the door as often as I used to. I don't slam the door as often as I could. I don't think the world is ending when someone says no to me about anything or I get a rejection. I'm doing better than that. So I'm going to compare myself to a hormonal teenager. I no longer have braces. I was lucky to have braces. But I'm no longer the person who thinks that the world revolves around me and that it owes me a favor. It doesn't. I've got to work hard. I've got to get up in the morning or in the evening, whenever your shift is, whenever you're getting the shift. That's the other thing. When I was a teenager, I wasn't getting the shift. Thankfully, that's fairly regular now, though it could always go away the next moment. So you can't place too much store in what people think of you. And you can't be asking the world for favors like, oh, I'm staying out all night with the lads. Mind you, I do say that sometimes. But anyway, compare yourself to a hormonal teenager and you'll feel a lot better about how far you've actually come. And you'll probably be less of an asshole to boot. Not that all teenagers are hormonal, or not that they're assholes. They're not at all. But it's most likely in your teen years that you will throw yourself onto a bed and pummel it like Vivian Leigh in Gone with the Wind. Do not let your children out of the house at all, or they'll only disappoint you. I know this, being a former child. If you let children out into the world at all, they're only going to say something to embarrass you, or they're going to grow up to be paranoid idiots with podcasts. So my best advice is not to let your children out of the house. That way you'll always know if their homework is done. They won't get STDs when they're older. There are so many advantages to it. I know that some will say that that's draconian and technically detainment of some kind. It's not. It's for their own good. You know the way conservatives are always saying that they know best? Well, I think we should know best and not let children out of the house. Anyway, I'm absolutely amazed that people who are having children are not working on, will work straight away on teaching them to swim and how to be flame retardant, because with the shit we're leaving them with, they're going to need some extra special skills or armour. So I think don't let children out of the house is probably the safest. Look, if the Conservatives can do that kind of draconian thing, why can't the rest of us? Set your house, this is rule 6, set your house on fire before criticising other houses. You know that your house can never be in as good shape as everyone else's. You're much too busy. You're having to work two jobs. It's not even your house. Either the bank owns it or a landlord owns it. And it's never going, you're so stressed, you can't keep it as tidy as you would like. So before you criticise other houses, before you watch Grand Designs or any of those, set your own house on fire. It might as well just burn it to the ground. NB, this is a joke. Everyone takes everything so literally these days. NB, JK, JK everybody, NB, JK, don't burn your house down. Get your chimney swept. But metaphorically, we all know we're all doing our best and that none of us is succeeding. So burn it, burn that shit to the ground, burn that shit to the ground. And now a short break in my imparting of the 13 rules to give you a note on diet, because eating all kinds of foods of different colours, different textures with all kinds of different nutrients in them, that's definitely bad for you. It's dulling your mind by feeding your muscles for some reason. But anyway, what I propose on these 13 rules is that we only eat sugar. Because let's face it, it is going to keep us high as kites. It's going to have us speeding like mofos. That way we'll get things done very quickly, incompetently, but quickly. And all our teeth will be rotten, so we can't injure people by biting them. So that is why I propose, it makes you more intellectual to just eat one kind of food. Monofoodism, it's called. And in monofoodism, you just eat one kind of food. And the food on this particular regime is sugar. Not sugar beets, there's too much roughage in that. What you also want is to be completely bunged up so that... what you also want is to be completely bunged up so that all your, you don't have to worry about bodily functions. You can only have worry about having big ideas. Big ideas coming out of your head instead of out your arse. Sugar, sugar only diet. That's my proposal. Rule 7, back to the rules. Pursue what is nearest, because that way you're more likely to get there. I know that you're supposed to pursue what is best for your community, but your community is the stuff that's around you. One of the problems in this world at the moment is that we're taking on all the problems everywhere. It's all coming into our phone and into our face every millisecond. So pursue what is nearest. Like, if your house is on fire, put that fire out. Don't, if you want to join the fire brigade, that's brilliant. but your own house will still be on fire. So pursue what is nearest. Only then, it's like putting the oxygen mask on. They tell you not to put on the oxygen mask of anyone near you until you've done it yourself on the plane, when the plane is hurtling towards the sea. Might as well put a mask on and be high as a kite on oxygen and sugar. Make sure you ring ahead and tell the airline that you're on a sugar-only diet and that it would be really helpful if it could be brought to you before the rest of the passengers, because you're going to have a lot of big thinking to do to stop the plane hurtling into the sea. Have I just given away my fear of flying? I think I have. Anyway, pursue what is nearest. That is rule number 7. Rule number 8 is tell the truth, but not really. What are you, a sociopath? Yeah, tell the truth wherever is possible. Be a truthful person, but don't tell the truth all the time. You know those people who say they're, I'm just telling it like it is. They're telling it like it isn't, but loud. I think we had that as a Flynnspiring. So sometimes it's best to be kind. If you are hurtling towards the sea and someone's asleep, do you want to wake them up? Do you want to wake them up on that fiery plane crash? No, let them sleep through it. They don't need to know. They might be having a lovely dream about not hurtling into the sea on a fiery crash. So tell the truth, live an authentic life and be truthful in general. But little white lies are good. This brutal honesty that is masquerading as intellectualism is a big pile of horse shit. That's the truth. So every now and again, you can hold your tongue. You can say nothing. You can tell a little white lie and honest to Jeebus. Life will be better for everyone around you. Yeah, telling it like it is. You're telling it like it isn't, but loud. And you're looking for attention. No more than myself. Please listen to my podcast. Please share my podcast. Please rate and review my podcast. That is the truth. Rule 9. Assume the person you are listening to is not listening to you. This is very important because none of us is listening. I've already told you how one of my biggest problems is interjecting and interrupting. It's rude and it's selfish and I'm trying to work on it. But definitely I'm doing my best to listen. This is my work. This is my all of my work on myself at the moment. I know I'm doing other things as well. I'm washing, for instance. I'm eating lots of sugar. But apart from that, I'm doing my best to really listen to what the person says, not compose an answer in my head. You've heard this in every self-help book ever, but it's so true. Assume that the person you're listening to is not listening to you. They may have something to impart, but they're not listening to you. That's part of the problem, is that people who are used to or want to lecture, that's not a two-way conversation. They're not listening. And in fact, the whole gig is not listening. They want to take on board everything that's said and just deflect it, just bat it back. It's not about going, oh, you've changed my mind, or, oh, I didn't get that perspective because I haven't lived it. So I'm going to add that perspective in. It's like, no, I'm going to crush you. I'm going to crush you. I'm going to destroy and annihilate you. I love doing that voice. I do it every week. I apologize if it hurts your ears, but it just is so satisfying to do. Be careful, like we've said before, be careful of gurus, except me. I'm the only guru you can trust. That's the absolute truth. And as you know, I always tell the truth. Assume that the person you're listening to is not listening to you, because usually it's true. Rule 10, be precise in your speech or just loud. That's right. If you just say something confidently, this seems to be how those lecture tour guys do it. Just say it loud and confidently. It doesn't even matter if it's true. There'll be a certain percentage of the people who scoff because it's not true and you've made an idiot of yourself in front of them. There'll be another percentage that just takes it as read. That's why when you let people say shit on your program or in your newspaper or in your house, you're partly responsible because you know that someone saying something confidently and loudly is going to be heard by the people who want to hear it. So if it's bad stuff, that's also on you. Not in my house. It's okay to say not in my house. Take your sugar and go. So that's 10. Be precise in your speech or just loud. Rule 11. Do bother children when they are roller skating, especially if they're roller skating very loudly nearby while you're trying to record a podcast. And also, in case you need the roller skates for some more adult business, you might want to borrow those roller skates because they're cheap. I'm not saying you steal them, but you might want to just conduct a little transaction where you buy the roller skates. Not only will the neighborhood be quieter from your perspective because you'll be skating, but also you'll save on energy because you don't have a car. You've made friends with people with cars. So you just need the roller skates. So I say, do bother children when they're roller skating and ask them why they're out of their house. Their parents are not supposed to let them out. These are the new rules that are going to make everybody happier. Rule 12, pet a lobster whenever you encounter one. What I'm saying is if you see them in restaurants, set them free. They're not cats. They're not furry. They're not fluffy. They won't purr. They won't make you feel good when you're feeling low, unless you like to eat them. I don't, but some people do. Many people do. It's a prized food, a gourmet food. Fine, eat one if you have to, but pet it first. Then see if you can eat it. If you can pet it, can you then eat it? Also, as we know, there's a big fashion for saying that lobsters have some kind of reps for primordial hierarchical systems. So definitely you should pet them because you should bow to your lobster kings. Bow to them because they have sharp, snappy claws. And it's only by petting them that you can appease them. So bow to your lobster kings and pet them whenever you encounter them. Rule 13 is an important one. Tip your shitty waitress. Now, I'm not saying waitresses are shitty. They're definitely not. As you know, I've been a server very often in my life. I could be again. But sometimes, I've encountered it a couple of times in the last 3 weeks, servers being a bit shitty, either not letting you settle up when you want to or passing remarks or just being a bit like, what? Whoa. And the thing is, I think it's okay to say, you know what, that's a bit rude if you really feel like you need to deal with it. Or don't do like I do and snap. That's because of my high sugar diet. I'm going to blame everything on that now. But my intellect is so sharp. I'm really clever. But I'm moody as fuck. But still, I have never, even when I've had it out with someone who's been a bit mean, honestly mean, the last few weeks, a couple of meanies. If I've had it out with them for being a bit mean, I've still tipped them because the thing is, even if they're being shitty, they're in a job where people are almost always shitty to them. So I endeavour not to be shitty, even when they're shitty. And if it doesn't quite work out like that, I tip them because we've got to look after the people who are doing those jobs where they take all the crap, like we've talked about before, the people who flush the toilets when you forget, the people who teach your kids, the people who, even if they're out of the house, those kids, you should be homeschooling them like the Catholic extremists who insist we all have Catholic ethos schools, but won't send their kids to them. Just wondering what that's about. Let's have a think what that's about. But so I say, tip your shitty waitress. Even if she's shitty, her life is probably shitty. And so even if you have to say something, try not to be I want to see the manager person. But if you do, still tip. Because you're going to leave the restaurant and they're not. And it's a rotten transaction. So rule 13, tip your shitty waitress. Don't be a shitty customer if you can. And even if you have been, make sure you tip. So there are your 13 rules. Do you feel enlightened? I feel unburdened. I can't believe this is a very exciting new time in all of our lives. You are not a victim. No one is ever a victim. No one who airs a problem they're having is saying they're a victim. Even people, some people would call victims, or call themselves survivors because they got through something shitty and moved on. But you don't have to be an asshole about not being a victim. You don't have to tell people to catch on at your speed. Slow down, sugar teeth. Relax. Pity yourself sometimes. It's not about self-pitying, but yeah, pity yourself. You're a mess. If you have pity on yourself or at least a bit of compassion for yourself, maybe we can stop being a mess. But the minute you blame someone else, stop pitying other people. Don't pity other people. Have compassion, which means listening in an open way. And pity yourself. You're such a tool. I'm a tool. We're all tools together. But instead of blaming other people for where we're at, it's time to look at who really is having a much harder time than we might be and look at who are having an easy time and blaming the elites. It's definitely people who don't eat sugar all the time. They're high on lobster or something like that. It's okay to be sad, but don't throw anyone else under the bus because you feel sad. And do things in bite-sized chunks. You can't accomplish all the lying down in one go. That's why I advocate a lot of naps. This is big, life-changing stuff. Don't think you can implement all of these incredible rules in one go. Treat yourself like a baby. Put yourself down for a nap. Lie down more. Compare yourself to the hormonal teenager you once were. And set your house on fire while you tuck into some sugar. It's really very clear. I know some of you are going to say, Plato said this already. Yeah, he did. I'm sure he did. But this is a new way of putting it. And I think I should get lots of money for phrasing it this way. Anyway, thank you for listening. Speaking of money, I don't want to ask, but if you would like to contribute to the Patreon, even a dollar for a month, if you find you're coming back regularly, that would be brilliant. A dollar for 1 month, not a dollar a month, if you're feeling a little flush at the moment, and you can do that, that would be fabulous. But I know people are strapped. I want to keep providing this podcast. If you can't contribute to patreon.com/Tara Flynn, IRL, and I know lots of people can't, there is no pressure. I can't stress this enough. No pressure on you at all. Just please keep coming back and listening. Please share. Please like, rate, review. That's actually the lifeblood of the podcast. If we can keep it visible, keep it going up the charts, keep the listening numbers high, then there's a reason to do it. Not everything we do is for money. Of course, we do need money to keep certain things going, and I hope to keep the podcast going. Why don't you, in this week of St. Patrick, would you pull a leaf off a four-leaf clover in the hope that we all get a little bit of work this week? Let's ask St. Patrick, who's been demoted ages ago, but sure, look, it's as good as wishing on a star, isn't it? He's our star, our lovely ambassador star in the saintly world. Go on, St. Patrick, let's give some of us a job this week. That would be absolutely brilliant. Then I'll sing Hail Glorious St. Patrick for you if I get a job this week. Not for you, the listeners, for St. Patrick. If he's real, he's listening. Anyway, thank you to Brian for producing, as ever. Thank you to the Headstuff Podcast Network. And thank you to the patrons on Patreon. We did a little straw poll during the week to see if people wanted a shout out by name. If you want a shout out by name, do let me know. I will definitely read out your name. I just was kind of a bit wary that some people might like to stay private. I just wanted to give you that option. But if you would like to be bigged up on this podcast, you got it. I am here to serve my patrons and my non-patrons. Patrons by ears alone. You're still patrons, so thank you for being here. It's time for a Flynnspiring. Worried about forearm hair? Read the news. That's right, the seas are boiling, the sky is molten orange. The last thing you need to worry about is whether you're hirsute of the lower arm or not. So forget the infomercials and worry about keeping your own neighbourhood. Start local. Start local and pursue what's nearest. Do something nice for someone else close to you today. Don't worry about the forearm hair. It'll probably fall off at some stage because of the molten sky. You won't need to worry about it then, and you'll feel like an idiot that you wasted so much time being paranoid about it. So if you're worried about forearm hair, don't be. Just read the news. Thanks, fellow idiots. See you soon.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.